Okay, well, so that work was, that project, that mirror project, will be where I work, collaborate just with one person and make a hologram mirror just for them. And so each mirror will be entirely different. And they won't ever be seen in public. They're strictly to be seen by one person over and over again in their life. But this project that I'm going to talk about now, which is in progress, is, well, I suppose unique compared to anything I'd done, because it's dedicated, as you can see, to all those who share the holographic faith. This is a picture of pre-visualization of one little tiny part of it. And I'll just start by kind of qualifying that statement, telling you a little anecdote before I read my paper. When I was at MIT, and Steve Benton was my co-PhD supervisor, I wanted to make a hologram that I'd similar to one I'd seen in the MIT museum that was made by Charles Vest. It was the heat plumes rising up from the wire, and I wanted to know how to do it. So Steve loaned me a book out of his library by Charles Vest on interferometry, and apparently it had been a book that Charles had given to Steve, and I opened up the front cover, and inside it said, "To Steve for keeping the faith." So that sort of qualifies, you know, what I mean by faith. My interest in developing a hologram along the lines of what most people expect as the subject of a hologram, a little princess, began in 2001 when I painted a self-portrait for the Portia Guiche Memorial Award in Sydney entitled Dr. Dawson and Daughter After Forbidden Planet. The painting, oil on canvas and retro-reflective glass beads, depicts me in a pose of the Magdalene by Piero della Francesca at the Duomo in Arezzo, but painted over black so as to be a silhouette somewhat like the famous Caspar David Friedrich Wanderer over the mist. And instead of the view beyond the Wanderer being of interest, the cape forms the background to a light-emitting painted image of a hologram, like it's a painting of a hologram. It's a painting of the hologram I'm making now. In front of my cape, you see an image of my own daughter playing with her puppy. The painting refers directly to the moment in the science fiction film Forbidden Planet, where Dr. Edward Morbius demonstrates to the amazement of onlooking space voyagers his ability to project an image of his daughter, Altara, from his mind. And I quote from the film, "Because my daughter is alive in my brain from microsecond to microsecond while I manipulate it." And this is the Friedrich painting. I won't be showing any other original works for copyright reasons, but this just gives you the idea of the underpinning kind of light arrangement. So in the intervening years, the idea changed its form from painting to hologram. However, my daughter has remained the subject. The legend of the true hologram has now taken the form of an artist's book, which is not like an ordinary book at all. And the book is about the intertwining of the filmic representations of holograms, the development of actual hologram types, such as embossed rainbow holo video, and the long history of the cult of light in art, which enables a particular kind of legend to emerge for each beholder. The pictorial styles characteristic of special effects seen in films such as Star Wars, I, Robot, Total Recall, Minority Report, Logan's Run, Star Trek and Forbidden Planet are combined with specific mosaic gilding and jewelling effects from Santa Prassede, Rome, Santa Maria Maggiore, Rome, the Baptistry of St. John, Florence, Piero della Francesca's Madonna del Prato at Montecchi, Simone Martini's Annunciation at the Uffizi Gallery in Florence, etc. And the central figure is a classically draped figure who appears standing in a geometric interior. The visual arrangement of the work draws on two historic artworks, Piero della Francesca's fresco cycle in Arezzo, The Legend of the True Cross. I'm sure most of you have seen that magnificent fresco series. And also the jewelled and gold enamel work at the Palladoro at San Marco in Venice. So the book cover of my book will be a gigantic metal shim, which is like this big by this big, which is the usual size of my previous interior holograms. And the subject of this paper is really the ideas which underpin this work. So it isn't like a technical talk. It's more a talk about what ideas are coming to contribute to the work, because I wanted to speak to you, because in a way the work is dedicated to you, to let you know this is what I'm working on now, and I probably will be for the next few years until we meet up again. It might be finished by then, I'm not exactly sure. So this is how I imagine it. So on the cover there's going to be 15 major square images which are each surrounded by a crochet border. These are obviously, this is St. John's Baptistry in Florence, which was one of the major kind of pictorial inspirations for this work. Each of the little pictures in my holographic work are going to be surrounded by a crocheted frame. This is a picture of the computer graphic room which I've made. You notice the mosaic that you saw earlier was one which I had made over a couple of year period, which was scanned and put on the walls of this room. I made the frame by drawing the geometry of the floor pattern of the building onto linen, and then improvising a series of crochet stitches with increase and decrease around the concave and convex shapes. In each scene, the crochet frame is going to be rotated to display a plan view matched to the orientation of the room in which the figure is standing with respect to the holographic plate for that particular scene. This aspect of the work is derived from the pictorial style frequently employed in action video games, where the picture space displays both a first-person point of view and various inserts which add additional spatial information and viewpoints. So you can see that frame there. So if we're looking at the figure from this orientation, then the frame will be that way. And then if we're looking from this way, the floor plan will be rotated. So onto the crocheted frame will be several hundred jewels, all made from holograms donated by companies and individuals from around the world. In the pre-visualization, which I'm working on now, the pearls are cut from optical holograms of a plaster bust of Mozart's smooth, wavy hair. As this classical subject for plaster busts of highly reflective, highly stable objects remains a mainstay of optical holograms. And this homage has a personal resonance as the world's largest hologram at the time, the marble statue of the Venus de Milo, made at the Laboratoire de Physique et Optique Besançon in 1976, was the catalyst to my becoming artist in residence at Loeb. The jewels are made from combinations of digital patterns and analog holograms of the sections of frosted Coke bottles that come close to the surface, and the headlights and air guards of Harley Davidson's. Another of the jewels have random star patterns mounted on security hexagons. The extreme precision and geometry of the security holograms, which include text such as original, genuine, and authentic, is broken down by collaging in a rather rough manner, and this integrates their exquisite precision with the handmade crochet, which is full of flaws. The brightness of these holograms from which the jewels of the frame are made is also much greater than the scenes. Cinematic conventions. The format of The Legend of the True Hologram is very much like most historic narrative cycles, where we see the same characters struggle through a series of events, each of which take place in a different location in time. However, to indicate that this is a narrative legend of light in a three-dimensional place, every one of these scenes is actually set in exactly the same location, and the character is fixed in one pose. The narrative stems primarily from the use of cinematic conventions of camera framing to create a story for this one static pose in a static space. The Hollywood conventions of using the figure or item of interest one third or two thirds into the frame, and the use of uneven close-up and open space on either side of the main character, designed to make the main character seem alternately downhearted and trapped, or free and open, operate exactly as they do from static shots in films. And in addition to stock film shots, such as close-ups, cropping and aerial views are used, such framing is unfamiliar in horizontal parallax, only hologram subjects, which generally occupy the centre of the frame. Both the location and the character of my hologram are composites. The central figure in all the panels of this narrative cycle is a composite of two people made from three laser scans of the body of a life drawing model, this is actually my daughter pictured at the moment, and the head of my daughter dressed in classical drapery with a hairstyle. This is the life drawing model. With a hairstyle and pose reminiscent both of classical sculpture and the princess from Star Wars. This is the costume I made here on a dummy at home. So the shape of the building in which the figure is standing draws on the geometric composition of the dome of San Ivo della Sapienza by Borromini in Rome, which enables the reflection of light and imagery from all possible combinations of planar, concave and convex surfaces. The floor plan is derived from the diagrammatic representation of the interference of two spherical wavefronts, and the mosaic on the wall I made from pastel and aluminium tessera, and which was scanned and applied to the walls of the virtual room. The origins of the image in science fiction. My approach to the pictorial style of the character begins with the best-known use of a hologram in a film, the image of Princess Leia in Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope. This film is probably responsible for generating an idea of what a hologram is in the mind of the general public, more than any real hologram or any other film, due to its widespread availability and the sheer number of people who've seen it. The hologram effect is blue monochrome and shows a miniaturised blue translucent classically draped young female with a light ray attached to her. So too is the central character of my story. The role of the hologram in this film is also quite specific. The message is a read-only memory, not real-time means of delivering a message, as are holograms in subsequent episodes of Star Wars. Specifically, it's a person-to-person message from Princess Leia Organa, which she addresses to the Keeper of the Force through her body language and accompanying sound message, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope." Well, my character also carries a message for the viewer. The antecedent of this scene in Star Wars can be traced to a scene in Forbidden Planet. Dr. Edward Morbius projects an image of his daughter, who was miniature, her figure predominantly white, standing on a small disc of light. Significantly, the image is a projection from Dr. Mobius's brain with no need for any kind of physical device in real time, whereas in Star Wars, the message is a read-only memory originating from some kind of mechanical device and projected by an expanding light ray. I'm now going to show images of seven of my holograms from the book cover, three of which are on exhibition. Pre-visualizations are on exhibition at the castle. And so you'll be just seeing only seven of the 15 pre-visualized images, as I'm going to sort of speak to you about some of the ideas underpinning the other seven images which have not yet been made. So in Minority Report, directed by Steven Spielberg, there's a combination of both the idea of a mental projection and a mechanical capturing of an image. In the temple, the real-time visualizations of the precogs who lie in warm water while electrodes transmit real-time images from their minds regarding their visions of the future are somehow captured and moved around by Tom Cruise with gloves tipped with little blue lights. He sorts through these mental images in order to track down what is going to happen in the future. But also in Minority Report, there is a kind of read-only memory version of a holographic kind of home movies where you see Tom Cruise look at old movies that look like holograms of his daughter, of his wife and his missing son. And these projections have overtones of earlier visualizations of holograms. Particularly in Minority Report, there seems to be a screen behind, and there's like a cutout hole where the figure seems to sort of burst through the picture plane, and there's a kind of a rippling back as the image speaks, which seems to kind of generate a type of excitement, so that there's a very active kind of flickering part of the image. One thing common to almost all representations of holograms in films is a kind of comparison. The virtual representation of a person and the real representation or the real experience of a real person. This is the aspect of holograms which was picked up by theorists such as Umberto Eco and Jean Baudrillard, and their notions of simulacra and the hyperreal are in turn, they're reiterated in films such as Logan's Run, which is probably the only film that used real holograms. At the conclusion of this film, the hero's hologram is interrogated rather than himself. And the film's punchline is that there is no sanctuary, no kind of escape from the world and the laws of Logan's Run. The filming shows the hologram made by Multiplex Company in 1976, rotated in reverse, producing real-time special effects since the face is distorted by time's mirror. In a similar way, duplication and replication surrounds the holographic character, the Doctor in Star Trek Voyager episode 36, Signs of Life, where the Doctor attempts to save a woman's life by making a hologram of her and treating her independently of her holographic image. And developing this theme further of having a hologram as a separate being to the real being, in Total Recall, Arnold Schwarzenegger calls upon his hologram, which appears as a kind of mirror image to himself and which enables him to escape. The hologram, which cannot be harmed or killed, has all the visual qualities of Schwarzenegger, but can appear in various locations in 4-3 dimensions apart from himself. In Total Recall, just as in many films with holograms, there's an important read-only memory message left and a character who acts upon it. In the case of Total Recall, the scene with the hologram is prefaced by a conversation which Schwarzenegger has with a pre-recorded image of himself on a laptop. Do you remember he has the towel wrapped around his head and he's like looking at his image? He goes, "If you're looking at this, you're not who you think you are." This idea of a message which is left and which will have an impact sometime in the future is a theme running through films with holograms, and probably shown in its fuller extent in the film I, Robot, in which the actions of the hero Will Smith are determined almost entirely by his conversation with a read-only memory message, a hologram which is left just prior to the death of his dear friend. And like many short and mysterious messages, this one leaves a margin for interpretation by Smith, yet is quite impenetrable to other people. Again, it's a single person-to-person read-only memory message in which the character of the holographic figure and the nature of the dialogue are not just simply the text, but the way in which the text is delivered and all the nuances that can be generated only through the experience of the presence of the person and the shared friendship, and this is what enables the main character to act. So you can see I'm leading to an argument here about the kind of presence that a person has in a hologram, the particular kind of presence that can enable a kind of continuing dialogue between real and virtual people. The visual representations of holograms are diverse. For example, in Total Recall, the hologram's just slightly transparent but in full colour, whereas in iRobot, it is completely flat yet appears out in space, and like a speaking larger-than-life two-dimensional screen but also in full colour. And some of these holograms are mute, others speak, and some of them demonstrate that they are different from reality by having some kind of optical glitch. shimmer or sparkle, or with missing parts of their image so that they are characterised by a lack of perfection and a lack of smoothness in their rendering. And they often have scan lines running through them, and in general they have a kind of transparency. The creation of a holographic character can be a way of projecting ourselves towards a person remote from us in time and space in order to call upon them to act in a particular way. And what's common to these representations is the sense that there is an empathy with the person represented in the image, which is reinforced by the energy of light. The engaging quality of light itself is frequently referred to by artists who produce holograms. And in the section on lasers and holographic art in Art in the Electronic Age, Frank Popper comments, "In order to build an historically legitimate aesthetic of holography, one has to detach oneself from dependence upon the photographic paradigm so important in understanding computer art. The persistence of this paradigm reveals itself especially in the overemphasized third dimension of holography. Taking a different viewpoint, one can postulate the self-creating power of light as the creative foundation of the holographic medium." Concepts from science fiction novels. Many of the concepts underpinning the depiction of holographic characters in films are derived from sci-fi novels. The classic 1968 novel Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick, an absolute must, by the way, which is the basis of Blade Runner, describes the act of empathy with a virtual character image in a compelling way. And I quote, "He crossed the living room to the black empathy box. When he turned it on, the usual faint smell of negative ions surged from the power supply. He breathed it eagerly, already buoyed up. The cathode ray tube glowed like an imitation feeble TV image. A collage formed, made of apparent random colours, trails, and configurations which, until the handles were grasped, amounted to nothing. So taking a deep breath, he steadied himself, he grasped the twin handles, the visual image congealed, he saw at once a famous landscape, the old brown barren ascent with tufts of dried out bone-like weed poking slanted into a dim and sunless sky. One single figure, more or less human in form, toiled its way up the hillside, an elderly man wearing a dull featureless robe, covering a mirage as if it had been scratched from the sky. His own feet now scraped, sought purchase among the familiar loose stones. He had crossed over in the usual perplexing fashion. Physically merging, accompanied by mental and spiritual identification with Wilbur Mercer, had reoccurred." End of quote. In Neuromancer, 1986, William Gibson furthers the potential of the relationship between the reader-only memory, known as the flatline, and a living person. The hero, Dix, is guided by the ROM of his deceased friend. And I quote, "He turned on the tensor beside the Hokusai. The crisp circle of light fell directly on the flatline's construct. He slotted some ice, connected the construct and jacked it in. It was exactly the sensation of someone reading over his shoulder. He coughed, Dix, McCoy, that you, man? His throat was tight. Hey, bro, said a directionless voice. It's Case, man, remember? Miami Joe boy, quick study. What's the last thing you remember before I spoke to you, Dix? Nothing. Hang on, he disconnected the construct. The presence was gone. He reconnected it. Dix? Who am I? You got me hung, Jack. Who the fuck are you? Car, you buddy partner. What's happening, man? Good question. Remember being here a second ago? No. Know how a ROM personality matrix works? Sure, bro. It's a firmware construct. So I jack it into the backs I'm using. I can give it sequential real-time memory? Guess so, said the construct. Okay, Dix. You're a ROM construct. Got me? There is a parallel between these fictional examples of the interaction of living and read-only memory remains of people and the appreciation of historic artwork, which depicts figures and stories long past, to contemporary viewers through artworks, which spatially encompass and interact with the environment in a direct way. The element which enables the transference of an immediate circumstance of viewing into the static composition is reflective media, which is either used in totality, as in gilded mosaics, or embedded within matte surfaces, as in gilded halos and frescoes. Though each of these techniques give rise to a highly intriguing arrangement with the viewer as a direct experience, some of these interlacings of reflective with matte imagery don't really transpose well to a hologram. The walls themselves, in demonstrating the effects of multiple reflections of the figure and light ray within the space, as though the room is completely enclosed rather than being intersected by the hologram plane, void the effect of the reflection of the viewer's space, which is then reintroduced through the highly reflective metallic surface of the entire hologram in nickel. And intentionally, there is the use in these images of the full dynamic range, which of necessity diminishes the diffraction efficiency of the image. The dark and mysterious zones of the interior and the bright glints of the gilding and particles are integral to creating an atmosphere of legend. These less bright major hologram panels are framed by brilliant embossed holograms in the way that the Palladoro narrative scenes are dull but framed by exquisite jewels. And in the case of the Palladoro, the size of the jewels is the same size as the people's heads in the enamel work. So at this minute scale, something quite incredible can happen, that there's an analogy that the person is in fact a jewel, a shining light. In each of these images, there is a reminiscence of mosaics, discrete image units, usually particles within the three-dimensional spatial volume, which vary in scale to the overall image size and image resolution. In the aerial view hologram, there's a light ray which is solid, and in some cases the particles are horizontal, rotational, or vertical. There are two examples which focus on the mandala drapery, the clothing being a kind of a light field around the figure. And in the first example, they're very fine and vertical in orientation, and the density of the gold is like rain. That's one of the pre-visualizations in the exhibition. And they're more densely clustered around the figure. And the second example has a point of view of the edge of the light ray attached to the figure, and the size of the units approach that of a wall mosaic, thus alluding to the preference at various periods in art for light to illuminate a figure from a particular distance and angle. Conclusion. Since the scene in Forbidden Planet, where Dr. Mobius projected a holographic image of his daughter from his mind, special effects representations of holographic images in film began to establish a genre of their own, quite independent of actual types of holograms. This genre of fictional holograms holds two important strands. Firstly, the pictorial qualities, which have often been compared with the real qualities of holograms. But secondly, and much more interestingly, I think, the roles and characteristics which are now routinely associated with holographic characters and the empathy that they have with real people. Thank you.
Paula's got some of the biggest ideas in art holography, hasn't she? Does anyone have any questions? Okay.
No questions, but just a slight correction. Logan's run, the nightly earth hologram is not the only... Oh, sorry.
Hey there. Now I have the booming voice. Yeah, the Logan's run hologram was not the only hologram in a movie. It was the man who fell to earth. There was a hologram of his family on another planet, and it was a multiplex hologram, and at one point he rolls it out and says,
This is where I was. That is fantastic. Part of the reason for me giving this paper now, before the work is finished, is that I really want to gather all that information. So thank you so much. Can anyone, like, if they know of anything related to this topic, I would be so grateful if you would email to me. That would be just fantastic.
In case I forget to email, the Time Machine has got a hologram, the recent version, has got a hologram that is found in a cave and is a walking, talking person with a message about how, what had happened, and is exactly an example of the empathetic friend. And a message that that has to be represented. So you
thank
should
you.
Check that out.
That's great.
Also, one of the very first pieces of
record this.
I think probably we did research when we were working on those holograms at Multiplex, and we found that probably one of the first film pieces of the modern age or modern era was the one by TH11. That was Fritjof Capra, and that was probably the first of the contemporary films to have had a holographer who drove a car and did everything.
Fantastic. The other thing I would like to do eventually when I show this book is I'd love to organize an exhibition that had those holograms or associated with the films. So if anyone has information about where those holograms are or who made them or where I could even see them or record them in a film, I'd be very grateful to find out about that as well. Yes, David?
I don't know why I didn't think of this earlier, but in terms of the empathetic friend, Quantum Leap, the hologram that sort of continually follows him back in time but can't interact but has some sort of piece of information that's going to change the story. So he's a plot device. Hologram, but he fulfills the same role of friend with message that is going to be pivotal in some way. The old guy who I cannot remember, but he's the hologram in Quantum Leap.
David, you should mention your paper on this subject. All of them are my paper
on the subject, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we should move on. So, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Adorno.
Thank you.